Welcome to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Mark Haney. Mark is a serial investorpreneur and the chief dreaming officer of the Haney Biz family of companies. With an endless supply of energy, he deploys his experience and passion to unleash the potential in others and share the stories of the region's most influential leaders. And now, here's Mark Haney.
All right, all right, all right. We got the new intro. Are you hanging or are you banging? This is the first Saturday of 2017. Never had the opportunity to do this before in 2017. This is a first. So today, I am thinking about riding the banging train. I'm here with Marcus Haney. How you doing, Marcus?
I am fantastic. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Now, if you've never listened to the Haney Biz Show or Entrepreneurs Unlimited, welcome. If you've been with us a while, you know that when we say hanging and banging, we're talking about banging is really about winning, right? Banging looks like when you're doing your very best at what's most important in your life. Banging is not about looking at the scoreboard. Winning is banging, right? Battling at your very best and focused at the best opportunity at that moment. So we are here today. We are talking a little bit of what's going on in 2017. Marcus, how's it looking?
Oh, everything's starting off fantastic. I want to say you started off with a win as well. You had a prediction that Trent Baalke was going to get removed from the 49ers organization. So
I was like,
started off with a win.
Nostradamus. Yeah, I do. That did happen. Now, who is going to get the new GM spot? That's a question.
You know, I'm not sure, but I want to know what the best opportunity for at the moment for you is right now.
Opportunity for me is helping entrepreneurs, right? So I have redoubled my commitment to helping the entrepreneurs in the Sacramento region. So what does that look like? That means I need to know all the great entrepreneurs, all the most ambitious small business guys in our region, and maybe there's a way I can help those guys. So that's what I'm committed to for the rest of 2017 and beyond.
I love it. Figuring out a way to say yes, right?
Yes, always. Now, today we are without Tom Cisneros, our good buddy. We said goodbye to him last week as he's chasing an entrepreneurial opportunity of his own, but we wish Tom the best, and we are actually fortunate enough to be partnering with him on that entrepreneurial opportunity. Yep. So, you know, we're creating opportunities. Sometimes you're one of those guys that's thinking about an opportunity. You're not quite ready to take that leap, and then a light bulb goes off. And in this case, for Tom Cisneros, we were part of that light bulb. A light bulb went off, and now he's starting a cybersecurity company. And so we are so proud of you, Tom, and we are always by your side. But
Absolutely.
Today, you know, this is going to be a little bit different show today because we are going to be challenged in a way. As again, if you're new, I'm the C student from Oakmont High School, and we keep things pretty low key around here. We keep things pretty easy to understand.
On the recess side of the school, right?
Yeah, exactly. But today we are bringing on some guys that are really up there in an extra intellectual capacity. We're bringing on an economics guy, a couple of economics guys. I think later in the show we're going to have Brooks Olson. He currently serves as the director of the Sacramento Center of International Trade Development and California Mexican Trade Center. I think this guy's got the longest job title in the world.
Is that come again?
Yeah, so he's going to come on a little later in the show, but after the break, we're going to go big time international, and we're going to meet Jock O'Connell. Jock is the International Trade Advisor with Beacon Economics. We're going to figure out how all this relates to the entrepreneurs right here in Sacramento. Join the conversation on Facebook Live. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited, broadcasting from Sports 1140 KHTK, streaming live, podcast, and YouTube at HaneyBiz.com.
And now, back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with the Entrepreneurs Advocate, Mark Haney.
All right, welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited, presented by Five Star Bank. I'm Mark Haney, and today I am joined by Jock O'Connell. Jock is the International Trade Advisor with Beacon Economics, and he is widely recognized as the foremost authority on world trade and global economic trends in the California region. How you doing today, Jock?
I'm still trying to wake up.
Oh, Jock, it's 9 o'clock in the morning.
It's pouring down rain outside, and I just wanted to curl up and sleep in. But for you, I came
in. I love it, Jock. And now on these mics, you got to speak into the mic a little bit, so I don't know if we need to adjust that over to you a little closer. Now, Jock, you're an economist, and you're talking to a C student. So as we go through a series of discussion points, I want you to make sure you dumb it down a little bit for me. Can you help me with that?
I'll be happy.
Okay, I appreciate it. Okay, so let's start off personal. Okay, Jock, is that Scottish? Where did
It's Celtic.
Celtic, okay.
My father's name, my father and I were both named John.
Okay.
He was known as Jack. I steadfastly refused to be known as Jackie, and so we went with Jock.
You didn't like Jackie?
No.
Now, Jock, my initial thought was, you know, I don't know you, but I initially assumed you were a great athlete or something. Did you play sports?
Yes, I did. I played lacrosse in college.
Okay, cool. Now, you're from Maine. You're out here in Sacramento now helping us understand what we ought to be thinking in terms of world trade, right?
Yes. Well, actually, I've been out here for quite a while. I came out here in 1970. So I consider myself more of a California native now than a resident of Maine, although I like to get back there and have lobster rolls and of that nature.
Yes.
Some years ago, I was working in Sacramento on a number of economic projects when the state of California woke up to the fact that international trade was becoming an increasingly important aspect of the state's economy. And as is the nature of things in around the capital, they looked around and said, well, does anyone know anything about this? And I said, well, I kind of do. And they said, right, you're the consultant. So that was about 35 years ago.
Wow.
And I've been in the business since of being the guy who spends most of his time looking at international trade from a California perspective.
And what kind of things do you look at from our perspective? How do you help us?
Well, a couple of things. One is what we export. We are a high-tech economy. We don't manufacture a lot of consumer goods in California. What we do and what we do export rather successfully is stuff that goes into stuff.
The little components.
Components that go into things. Southern California is does a lot of manufacturing in avionic products.
Okay.
They go into Boeing and Airbus
aircraft. Right, right.
So the final assembly is done somewhere else, but the components are manufactured here. So that's one thing. We look at the manufactured goods that are being exported, the merchandise exports.
And you measure the trends? Do you measure the growth? What do you look at, though?
We do. Now, if you ask me the question, how much do we export? My honest answer is we don't have a clue.
Okay. Because, nobody really knows.
Because the reporting systems are not designed to tell you, you know, how much of what is produced here in Sacramento, for example, is exported to China. One of the problems is that statistically, in terms of trying to understand the flow of goods and where exports come from and where they go, is that very often a company, say, in Sacramento, will sell its product to an intermediary organization, say, in Miami, and a trading company, say, in Miami, that has contacts throughout Latin America.
Okay.
And so the sale from Sacramento to Miami is considered a domestic transaction.
Right.
It's not tracked by anyone. Once it leaves the country, certain paperwork has to be filled out saying where are the goods going, what are they, how much do they weigh, how are they being transported. There's a wealth of information that's collected from the documents that accompany an export transaction. But what it doesn't tell you is where the goods were produced.
Right. What about stuff like the film industry? Can that be tracked?
That's become increasingly difficult. There's a whole array of things.
Or software.
Well, that's a big problem. It used to be where, and you're old enough to remember, going into Best Buy or another store to get your latest software app, your program. We didn't call it apps, then we call them programs. And you got it in a box, and it came on a disc. And so you were buying a physical product. Time, technology evolves. We now download apps from the internet. You can't track those. There are no customs posts on the internet. So you go online now, a program that you would have bought, say, 10 or 15 years ago at the Best Buy store in Natomas, you now download from the internet. You go online, you give your credit card number, and the program downloads, and it could download from a server in Stockton or in Singapore, depending upon the flow.
Stuff's tough to track. There's no question. I'm envisioning people coming in to the U.S. or thinking of the U.S. as a great place to buy stuff. You got the export side, and then you got the import side, and you hear about the trade deficit. What is that?
It's the difference between what we import and what we export. And for the last 35 years or so, we have bought more foreign products. We've imported more than we've exported. The last time the U.S. consistently ran merchandise trade surpluses was back in the 1960s. The last merchandise trade surplus that we've seen in the United States was 1975. There's been, over time, sometimes for political reasons, sometimes for ideological reasons, sometimes for pure economic reasons, a lot of concern about the size of the trade deficit and its persistence. Certainly, President-elect Trump very much wants to reduce, if not eliminate, the U.S. trade deficit. That's going to be exceedingly difficult to do since we've come to depend upon importers to provide 98% of our clothing and 99%
right,
of our
and Donald Trump, our new president, wants to. He's focused on the jobs aspect, right? But so how do you rationalize the jobs aspect of things that he wants to be a little bit more? I'll call it protectionist. That's my term. And then you want the free market economy. The economic growth drives jobs as well. How do you rationalize that dichotomy?
I don't know. That's sort of a conundrum of this administration. On the one hand, you've got a Republican president-elect. Republicans are traditionally free market, take the heavy hand of government off of business, and yet he's using the bully pulpit of being in the position he's in to try to pressure first U.S. companies, Ford, General Motors, and Carrier, but most recently Toyota, into keeping jobs or bringing jobs into the United States.
He's got a lot of influence. Those tweets, they seem to make people, take a look. It affects the stock market. I know it's the stock. I watch the stock market every day, you know, go up and down. And it's been going up since he took office.
Well, there's a certain genius in the timing. I mean, people say, well, there's something wrong with this guy. He's up at 3 o'clock in the morning. But what he does is that by virtue of doing that at 3 o'clock in the morning, he sets the agenda for the conversations that are going to take place on all of the talk shows around the country for the next 24 hours.
Right.
But the idea of trying to bring more jobs back to the United States is made more difficult by the fact that we are moving more and more to automation in manufacturing.
Right.
U.S. manufacturing output has increased over the last 10 or 15 years. U.S. manufacturing employment has plummeted.
Well, is there a skills gap? I mean, because we're having trouble importing high-tech workers to come in, right? Is it hard to get skilled technologists?
A lot of the jobs in manufacturing involve repetitive labor. And you can use machines to do that work. And the virtue of using the machines is that they don't take lunch breaks. They don't strike.
Right.
They run 24/7. So the people you employ in manufacturing facilities now increasingly are the people who repair the robots when they break down.
Right.
But the people who are used to do the repetitive work, the people who found gainful employment, middle-class jobs in manufacturing establishments with perhaps no more than a high school diploma are being pushed to the sidelines of the economy. I think that Trump's appeal was largely to those people in the Midwest and other states that have seen their jobs migrate somewhere else. There was little emphasis in the campaign on what to do about automation. I two or three weeks ago wrote this op-ed piece for the Sacramento Bee in which I concluded saying, somewhat facetiously, that Trump's greatest accomplishment might be figuring out how to get robots to pay into Social Security. That's going to be a real hurdle in terms of if you're able to attract more manufacturing capacity back to the United States, it's not necessarily going to translate into manufacturing jobs for blue-collar workers.
Right. So we have to get educated. Our young people today have to get smarter and get educated and, you know, do their math and science.
Definitely. Yeah. That's what's going to keep them and us as a nation competitive.
And these policies, these the restrictions on trade coming in, these protectionist type policies. What does history tell us when we start putting tariffs on things?
Well, one of the history lessons is that other countries retaliate. So that if we slap tariffs on, say, Chinese or Mexican imports, the likelihood is that they're going to retaliate by putting tariffs on us. Or in the case of China, the real concern is not so much that they're going to impose barriers to U.S. exports, although I must say that one of the sectors that's most vulnerable to those kinds of interruptions is agriculture and the agricultural exports from the Central Valley. But in general, the threat that the Chinese can really do is to start messing up with U.S. companies that are currently doing business in China, imposing all sorts of regulations, hardline regulations that would interfere with their profitability.
Okay, well, we're going to have to cut to break here. And, we've been talking about jobs. It gives me a chance to plug my sponsor, Kim Silvers HR. If you are an employer and you've got workers, well, we all know that it's tough to stay compliant. Your personnel policies are very, very important. So if you need help in the realm of HR or consulting and how to keep things compliant around your office, do not hesitate to call my good friend Kim Silvers at Kim Silvers HR. When we return, we will meet another international trade guru, Brooks Olson. We're going to dive deeper into what international small business opportunities really exist right here in Sacramento. After all, Sacramento is the capital of the seventh largest economy in the world. There's a ton. Fifth? I'm hearing not fifth. We're getting bigger. This is great. Join the conversation on Facebook Live. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited from Sports 1140, KHCK, streaming live, podcast, and YouTube at HaneyBiz.com.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with HaneyBiz's Mark Haney.
All right, welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited, presented by Five Star Bank. I'm Mark Haney, and today I am joined by the international trade guru and the man with the longest job title in the world, Mr. Brooks Olson, is in the house. How you doing, Brooks?
Very good. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, now what is your job title? What do you call yourself? What do they call you?
The simplest definition probably is an international trade advisor, consultant that works with public institutions to help businesses, but I'm also the honorary consul of Bulgaria to Northern California.
Oh, wow. A lot of stuff. Let's talk about this. So what does a day look like for Brooks Olson? What do you do?
You know, mostly I also work for the Los Rios Community College District. So we're working with a variety of trade-related activities, education trade-related activities. I do some diplomatic service for the government of Bulgaria.
Wow.
And I work with faculty at the colleges, so it's a pretty diverse day.
So you help people better understand trade relationships, and I know you help entrepreneurs. Do you help them to take their products out of our country and get them sold in other areas?
You know, that's exactly sort of our niche. You heard Jacques say earlier that, trade policy causes us to make different decisions as business people about do I go to that country, do I not go to that country? And actually, those are the questions we get. Those are the requests we get for help. And how do I avoid having a pitfall and losing money and or making a bad decision on spending my minimal marketing dollars. So we work with those areas.
Yeah, as entrepreneurs, we're looking for the best opportunity. What are the best opportunities that people in Sacramento today might see?
There's sort of a subterranean community of businesses around that we just didn't even know we're exporting.
Okay.
You could be one tomorrow.
We'll keep it a secret.
Yeah, so okay, we won't talk beyond that.
Keep it on the down low.
And actually, every day we run into companies who say, oh, wow, I got an order from Dubai or I got an order from China. Should I take it? Or I took it, and now what do I do?
Right,
it's so multifaceted. Everything from wine to alfalfa to manufactured little parts and components that you have no idea what they
are. Right. So if somebody's new to exporting and they get that order from Dubai or they get the order for it might be from Canada, what are the biggest challenges that we run into as entrepreneurs, right? Because we got to collect the money. We got to figure out a way to do all the money transfer, exchange rates, and keep it all legal. And then we also got to figure out logistically, how am I going to get my product over there?
You know, those questions are so normal for the last 25 years, except they've gotten a lot easier to deal with.
Okay.
And with a digital media and digital mainstream and electronic commerce, you can get paid a lot easier. You don't have to use banks as an intermediary, generally speaking. And you can find your market using the internet. You can use the resources there to identify buyers.
Give us an example of maybe a success story. What has somebody done here that's really allowed them to grow their business outside the U.S.?
I'll give you a quick one. I've worked with a company in Davis for quite a few years. And they import a lot of ingredients for the food industry, dehydrated garlic, onion,
okay,
mushrooms, etc.
They import that from
China.
From China. Oh, really?
And,
okay.
And other parts of Asia.
Okay.
And it's used in our our food industry and the frozen foods and the sauces and the soups, whatever. And they realized, well, man, that consumer market in China that we know pretty well would be a great export market for things that we don't have, like California almonds, like dried
so
fruits.
The people that were importing the sounds like herbs and stuff like that from China,
correct,
decided to kind of do a little switcheroo and start selling back to their to the country that was supplying them products.
Absolutely, okay. And they realized their customer base was able to afford it now.
Yeah,
which it wasn't 10 years ago.
Right, these emerging economies are now much more affluent.
Yes, and they actually have become like an export broker, a middleman.
Okay.
So they buy from the farmers, they buy from the food producers locally, the packers and the producers get together and they create customized packaging, and now they're exporting containers in the last year over to China and selling it directly into the commerce streams.
So now we talked earlier about who might be a good exporter, and you know, the first thing that came to mind for me is manufacturing, and we don't have a ton of manufacturing here in Sacramento, but manufacturing, if you have a great product, they're going to want it all over the world, like the film industry. We have a lot of high tech stuff in the Silicon Valley, but you also mentioned that there was a service economy, that there people are actually exporting service to around the world.
It absolutely, and we find we find that companies that have maybe traveled abroad all of a sudden get asked, can you help us with our environmental mitigation issues? Or
okay,
can you help us with
like consulting type stuff?
Yeah, more maybe drought-savvy agriculture production,
right,
and better packaging and that type of thing. And we have experts in that,
right,
up and down the state.
Maybe even international trade relations. Shoot, that's we can export
figure
some of that. Yeah. You don't speak any other languages, do you?
A couple. Yeah.
Now, your background, you didn't take the more traditional role to being an advisor in this realm, right? You were a secret service guy? Is that right? Can we talk about that on the air?
That was my first life. That was my first
life.
How
did that lead to this?
You know, it's an interesting dynamic. I did a lot of federal law enforcement work, and one of my postings was overseas. And as a result, that posting turned into an international trade sort of promotion,
okay,
opportunity. And I thought at the end of my career there, what? Everybody does law enforcement after they end law enforcement. I try something different. So,
that a way to go.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's worked out pretty well. You've even become the honorary consul to General to
Bulgaria. Yeah.
Now, okay, that's a pretty unusual title. I don't think I've ever met anybody in that sort of role.
You know, there's I think there's 12 in Sacramento right now.
Wow.
And the first ones were very common countries, Italy, Austria, Germany for a short time. Now there's Russia. Mexico's always been here, and they have an established consulate
here.
And, you know, we primarily I work I work with trade promotion. So, you know, if visitors come from Bulgaria to San Francisco, the Bay Area, or here, I sort of help them network with the right sellers and buyers.
So you are connected. Now, are there any federal or state programs that can help my company go international?
Lots. You know, and that's the problem. Companies just really have trouble accessing all those services because they're out there. They're just not really known. But the U.S. Department of Commerce has an office here in Sacramento, two international trade specialists that work in my little building over off Ethan Way. And we sort of don't fumble the ball when we help clients figure out how to export and then take them overseas to help them export.
Okay. So now what kind of is there funding that is provided for marketing? You were talking about a program earlier where you guys have funding that might help a small business guy to go national.
Besides the information and the handholding and the help and sort of guiding a company to the international market, there's actually new money from the SBA. It's been around about 5 years, called the State Trade Export Program,
okay.
CaliforniaStep.org. And companies can get free marketing money to help them navigate the foreign market, whether it's to a trade show or a trade mission or creating marketing materials in a foreign language, something to help the exporter and the company maybe succeed a little bit easier.
And when you talk to people in other countries, what's their view of California? Is it because here in the U.S., doesn't it feel like California is sort of known as the overregulated leftist sort of, you know, West Coast guys who are kind of different in a way. But if you go around the country and people hear you're from California, they don't necessarily put all that together. Don't they think of us as like the high-tech guys and the film guys and stuff like that?
You know, that's absolutely right. Matter of fact, in Germany, there's a couple of big trade shows like in Hanover. And California's often has been recognized as a nation state in Germany.
Wow.
And when you think, like Jock said earlier, the fifth largest economy, it's bounced up and down. But really, the California brand brings companies to the venues that we try to help companies sell in a lot easier.
Yeah, we're starting something called the California Edge. It's a fund. It's more than a fund, but one of our guys is an international expert, and he told us about this image that California has, and so we decided to name the fund the California Edge, and it's because of the world's perception of California is so positive.
Yeah, we've always been considered leading edge technology state, and it's it goes to a lot of our food production, the safest food in the world, and buyers look to California's food industry up and down the state as the state, and China looks really craves the California brand.
Yeah, we're kind of considered that luxury brand. It's trusted. It's California. So if I'm an entrepreneur with a product here in Sacramento and I'm from California, that is actually wind at my back. It's an advantage to be building something where other people are thinking, oh, I'm getting out of California. It's overregulated, blah, blah, blah. It's actually an advantage if you're going international to be from California.
It's a heck of a marketing advantage. Absolutely right.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on today, and we're going to ask you to stick around. We're going to head to a break. We're going to bring Jock O'Connell back on the show, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about what all this stuff means to Sacramento's business climate. How does the opportunity to go international really play itself out right here in Sacramento? This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited. I'm Mark Haney, and we will be back in just a minute.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Haney Biz Investorpreneur Mark Haney.
All right, welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited. I'm Mark Haney, and today's show is presented by Five Star Bank. And you know what? I've got two guys. This is kind of an interesting one. We brought the C student in with the A students in the AP class, so we've been getting a little bit of an education today. I've got both Jock O'Connell and Brooks Olson, two of the foremost authorities on international trade in the region, and they are here with me today. And guys, we've been talking about how California fits in to the world. But let's go deeper and let's talk about Sacramento. How is Sacramento's proximity within California? And I'll throw this over at you, Jock. Where does Sacramento fit in to the world?
Well, we're not one of the larger manufacturing centers of the country. We do contribute heavily, though, to the agricultural export trade. It comes as a surprise. I deal frequently with foreign visitors coming into California, coming to Sacramento, and they know about Silicon Valley. They know about Hollywood. What stuns them, though, is the realization that California is the number one agricultural state in the United States. They think of, you know, that's the job of Kansas yeah. and Iowa, the big grain states. Farm receipts in California are 1.5 times that of the next largest state in the United States. So we are the principal agricultural state, the principal agricultural export of the United States. And that a large part comes from the Central Valley. You know, this is arguably the most valuable piece of agricultural real estate on the planet. And we don't grow wheat, corn, soybeans. We grow specialty crops, high value products that command a market internationally. So we were talking earlier about the California branding. California Grown is an established brand that's used to designate.
It's trusted.
This is California. It's trusted.
Yeah, Brooks, do you feel like it's trusted? I mean, even the wine here is pretty well trusted from what I understand. Well, it's what my wife tells me anyway.
Yeah, it really is. And we've actually taken maybe close to 100 small California wineries from Napa to the foothills in Amador to Monterey down to Temecula over to several wine shows in Europe and quite a few in Hong Kong. And millions of dollars of our small boutique wineries are selling product there because the consumers throughout Asia recognize the brand.
Right. Now, when you take a client over there or somebody that you're trying to be a matchmaker with, are they typically selling through some kind of distribution in these foreign countries? Because it seems to me it'd be hard to sell one at a time to the end users.
Yeah, you know, there's two ways that wine producers and growers work overseas. One is sometimes they just might contract an export broker to represent their wine. So sometimes we'll have a company go with us that represents 8, 9, 10 different brands. And that's very economically feasible as a small winery to pay that broker to help you sell. You know, the other thing that works well is you're selling to a probably an import agent or an importer mm-hmm. or a distributor. And you create that agreement with them. You're not selling a case or a bottle.
Okay.
You're selling maybe a year contract or
gotcha. So maybe some kind of licensing agreement.
Yeah, 500 cases, and they'll
okay.
buy those from you over a year's period of time. You ship them over, and they sell it to the retail outlets.
And a lot of what we talked about today is about exporting, and we know there's a trade deficit. And I guess I might have helped with that because I imported a lot of stuff from Asia, right? And I've been in the security camera industry for a long time. We import products, cameras, and so on. Create our own private label brand. How easy is it for an entrepreneur to go overseas and bring something in, and they bought it at 10 cents on the dollar and remarket it here to their customers in the U.S.? Jock, do you see that happening?
Yeah, certainly. One of the things we frequently ignore when we talk about international trade, we talk about exporting. Well, it's importing. U.S. companies, California companies, Sacramento companies do a considerable business of bringing products into the United States and then reselling them to domestic markets and constituents. So that's an important aspect. One of the ideas that came up while Brooks was talking was that there is, in dealing with international trade, there's or with exporting, there's push and pull. You know, we aggressively market our products overseas, but at the same time, you've got supermarket chains, department store chains, importing companies, trading companies abroad that are searching for sources of goods around the world. And so they're just as likely to come to farmers in the Central Valley or food processors here in Sacramento and say, we need X number of cases or pallets or containers full of what you're producing. So that may come as a surprise to mm-hmm. the food processors. Somebody
right.
walks in and says, suddenly they're in the export business.
Do you have anything to add to that, Brooks?
Yeah, you know, that's that kind of gets to our community college connection. When you're talking about how can we help companies and entrepreneurs do this. But it's so strange. It sounds like a foreign language. So, you know, workshops and new kinds of curriculum on the campuses at Los Rios, for example, talk about global competency, global fluency. And it's not rocket science. It's basically understanding what you already do, but putting a foreign spin on it, knowing your customer, recognizing a customer's needs, and negotiating a price.
Now, do you guys running in these circles, obviously you watch the international news, you watch the news. I watch CNBC in the morning and get up early and see what's going on, you know, with the stock market and so on. And you hear a lot about terms like globalization and nationalism and how those two opposing sides are maybe in an impasse right now or approaching something. Brooks, do you run into that in your line? I mean, of work, are you talking about that stuff?
Sure. It wasn't so many years ago that companies would say, "Nah, I just use the domestic market. I don't want to go overseas. Too complicated. Too much fraught with regulations and import problems, and not knowing who your customer is over there." And that's changed with the digital economy.
Yeah.
And ease of social media and Facebook and every other social connectivity medium out there, communication is so easy now. And I think the concerns about global problems affecting your business or not being paid have abated.
Okay. Really. So it's gotten a lot better. Now, we only have about a minute left, so I was going to ask you one final question each. Maybe give me just like a short answer. Now, we have the two foremost authorities on international trade right here in this room. So we have that number one and two. Who's number one? Who's number two between you guys?
Well, there's the policy guy. We'll arm wrestle.
Oh, we have one and two here on Sacramento's entrepreneurial radio show, Entrepreneurs Unlimited. Thank you guys for joining me on the show today. I learned a lot. It definitely gives a sense of optimism to think about, wow, I've got this business that I'm having a little bit of success with here locally. Maybe there's an opportunity to go global. So thanks for bringing that information. And I really, really appreciate it. It was definitely a change of pace for us as small business guys. So thank you guys for coming on the show. And I also want to invite all our listeners to come visit me, Haney Biz, in Rockland. I am trying to help entrepreneurs to grow their business. And sometimes when you talk to an entrepreneur like yourself, maybe it's a guy that's been in a scrape or two, and you're talking about business, sometimes a light bulb goes off that sort of motivates you to take that next step or a baby step in the right direction. So I invite you, any of you, to come visit me. And you know what? I might have, maybe the old man's got an idea for you. I'd love to help share my story with you. But more importantly, I would like to listen to your ideas, and maybe I can say something that is somewhat complimentary that has a light bulb goes off for you. And, you know, we also have services that help you to build your business. You know, we have accounting backroom services and so on. So if it makes sense for me to recommend somebody to you, I am always happy to do that. So come bounce your idea off me, and I will help point you in the right direction. You don't want to miss next week. We're going to have risk management guru Rob McVicker of Hub International. He will be joining us, as well as the highly successful and sometimes controversial real estate developer Paul Petrovich. When I return, I will share my takeaways and closing thoughts about today's show and about winning in 2017. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited, broadcasting from Sports 1140, and we will be back in just a minute.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Mark Haney.
All right, Mark Haney back here. We've changed up this music a little bit. Each of these songs has some special meaning to me. That one's Small Town, but each one has got a special place in my heart. And so we've mixed it up a little bit just for a little bit of fun. And today we took a little more of a worldview on business. But whether you're Donald Trump or you're a small business guy like me, I mean, I think the most meaningful decisions The most meaningful decisions are around our leadership, and they're really around your asset and resource allocation. And you know, your resources, really, this talks about your people. And I think probably the one resource that you've got to figure out how to manage most correctly is yourself. I mean, for me, I have trouble just managing myself so many times. It seems like it's the toughest part.
It makes two of us.
I am back here with Marcus Haney, and we are talking about business and small business and the worldview. You have trouble managing yourself, Marcus? Come on now.
I think the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, so
yeah.
I don't know. You know?
You got to have routines. You got to have self-discipline. I mean, what's the toughest part about running your business today? Is it managing yourself?
Well, I think so. I mean, I have a lot of opportunities out there in the forefront of my mind, and so focusing myself on the base hits, as we like to call it, and chasing the stuff that is aka closest to the money, I think is the challenge, because you can go off and chase all these wild objects and wild dreams of things that are going to take years to develop, when most of the time you got to kind of look back, take a sit back to where you know you can focus to win, you know.
Yeah, no question. And I think for me, I always think back to my team and how to surround myself, I think, with the right people. And, you know, because, I mean, when you're a one-man show, you got to manage yourself. If you got a little bit larger company, you got to learn how to manage other people. In a bigger company, you're managing managers, and then maybe you're managing functional managers. If you're in a bigger enterprise, you've got leadership in multiple companies. You have multiple divisions that are actually their own business models and own businesses.
Which you had to create over at Northern, right?
Well, we have that, and we definitely had that. And but the skill sets that go into managing an enterprise and helping run more of a larger organization. And ours was a smaller, you know, kind of a medium-sized company, you know, five businesses. And now it's a lot different. And now, you know, we have so many businesses under roof, and each manager is doing their own thing, and we're in different industries. It makes it even more complex. So,
yeah, so what do you do to keep yourself focused?
Well, I think, obviously, I focus on myself and my, you know, that's the one thing that I have most control over, I think, is managing myself. So what I do in my routines, and my wife and I were talking, I've talked about my step minimization program last week and how I am trying to, she thought that sounded like I was lazy, which I am, but not. I'm actually trying to figure out a way to take most productive steps. So
gotcha.
Why take a step that's unproductive? Why waste time on things that maybe somebody that's stronger than you in that area might be able to work on, and let you focus on what you're good at, which for me is not a lot.
Or not international trade, right?
Yeah,
like these guys
today
were fantastic.
Yeah, if I was to take a, you know, and even when we had our businesses back in the day, we had a one group that imported, and I was not the expert in that realm. I was able to surround myself with people who were great at that, and I think it's been helpful to find a way to help have the right resources allocated to the best opportunities, right? And I think that's, you know, that's probably the biggest challenge. As we sit back, it's 2017. It's the beginning of the year, beginning of a new opportunity. I think we ought to, if you're like me, you're asking yourself, am I allocating my resources most appropriately? Those are my big decisions, and am I doing that?
As an entrepreneur, I mean, how do you gauge that, though? I mean, so you're looking at all your resources, you're putting your chess pieces out there,
yeah.
And you know, to try to go, how do you measure that,
yeah,
against what you really think is supposed to go?
Well, I always write it down and revisit. So when we take it, you know, the Haney Biz group of companies, we've got what we call the Rockstar planning program, where you write out your business plan, and you've got your budgets, and you have your way of following up on a regular basis throughout the year. And I think so often when you write it down and revisit, it makes it so much, you're so much more committed to it when
no
you
doubt.
Write it down. And if you have an accountability partner on your team, if you have somebody that sort of sits with you to help make sure your teammates together, I call it the friend power, right? When you have a friend next to you helping you out to kind of help hold each other accountable, so many times that's what gives you the willpower to succeed. So people ask me, Mark, hey, you know, how do you have time to manage all these things? And I really don't. I would say I don't manage these businesses. I definitely do not micromanage. I do not play golf. I do not cheat on my wife. So I have a lot more time than most people that are chasing their dreams. Yeah, I think it's what you carve out in terms of your own personal time allocation and the allocation of your team that really makes all the difference in the world. And I think for me, what I'm good at is I think I'm good at finding the good in other people. And I think there's so many times, Marcus, where we it's easy to pick things apart. We could make fun of our political system, you know, Trump and Hillary, and, you know, we could talk about all these things that are reasons why it might not work, but they're out of our control, right? Yeah. Every minute that we spend on thinking about things that are outside our control or outside of what we're good at, those are wasted minutes. So I think for me, if I can have an opportunity to see the good in people, I have to meet those people in order to see the good. But I don't know. That's what I'm doing for 2017. I'm going to look for the good in people. I'm going to be banging this year. And my way of banging is working as hard as I can to meet as many good people and find the good in them. And maybe I can help them develop the good in themselves. That's what I'm committed to do in this year. And it's just kind of as we wrap up, I'll tell you a quick story. I was in AM/PM picking up some cold beverages the other night. It was one of those long days after
Haney
work.
Haney Light,
long right. day after work, you know, a lot of meetings. And I just, you know, I'm going to unwind. And there was a long line. And here I am. I finally get up there and I'm fumbling around, got my business cards in my wallet, getting the money out and all this. They don't take
goals, do they?
I don't have an ATM card. My wife doesn't trust me. Yeah, they don't take my goal business cards, but wife doesn't trust me with the ATM card. So I'm looking for some cash. And anyway, next thing I know, a guy taps me on the back of the shoulder and he says, "Here you go." And I had dropped a $100 bill on the ground. And I was like, wow, that guy, there was a long line. I would have never known. I inadvertently.
You would have bought his beer.
Instead, that $100 beer, a bill, bought me beer. And, you know, if I wouldn't have had that $100, I mean, that was like, it made me think about the good in people, right? Because that guy, it would have been easy for him just to sort of step on that take it. And I would have probably never missed it. So if you're like me, you don't like dropping $100 bills, you know. You do not. Sometimes you don't realize it, but you do not like to waste that extra $100. So if you're like me, you want to see the good in people. And, you know, sometimes I need to bounce ideas off of people. So if you're like me, come on down to the Haney Biz. Bounce an idea off the old man. Maybe I'll be able to help find a $100 bill for you. And you know what? Maybe I'll be able to help you buy that beer if that's what you needed. If you're like me, I focus on my family, I focus on my friends, and I focus on the place that raised me and the place I will never leave, my hometown here in Sacramento. Never above you, never below you, always by your side.